Thank you. On behalf of our board of directors, I encourage you all to participate in the Nissan installment of our Faye and Nathan Holtzman Rosh Chodesh program that will take place Sunday night, March 30th at 8 p.m. via Zoom and will feature Mrs. Esty Kimfley. The program is free of charge. Non-members can register on our website, masorahbaltimore.org, to receive the link. Our complete Rosh Chodesh schedule can be found on the tables outside. Our post-Pesach spring semester, I know we're thinking ahead, will begin Sunday, April 27th. In addition to our semester courses, stay tuned for information for Shiurim in May by Mrs. Shalvi Friedman, Rebbetzin S.D. Hamilton, and Mrs. Rifki Siegel. More information will be sent in the next few weeks. In addition, Masorah Baltimore is planning a trip to Towson University to experience their Forget-Me-Not Holocaust exhibit, and details will be available after Pesach. You will also soon hear about upcoming learning opportunities sponsored by the OU Women's Initiative as well. When we were approached by the OU Women's Initiative about partnering for this program, we jumped at the opportunity. Our organizations share the goal of creating meaningful Torah learning opportunities for women. While we operate on a more local level here in Baltimore, the OU Women's Initiative is able to have a global reach and impact through their myriad of programming. In addition, their groundbreaking leadership programs for women in the Jewish communal space has been instrumental in strengthening the work that many of us do for the cloud. I am personally grateful for the opportunities they have provided for me, which in turn impact my work for the women of our community in Baltimore. I would like to thank the director of the OU Women's Initiative, Rebbetzin Dr. Adina Schmidman, and Ayelet Shachar, Torah Programming Coordinator, for working closely with me to put this morning's program together. Collaborating with both of you has been a true pleasure, and I hope we continue to partner for many years to come. It is my pleasure to begin today's program by introducing Rebbetzin Dr. Adina Schmidman, who will get our official program started. Her impressive bio, along with those of today's speakers, are available on the table outside. In order to be respectful of your time during this busy time of year, each speaker will be coming up one after the other without interruption to share their Haggadah insights and ideas. Thank you for joining us this morning and taking the time to prepare yourself for Pesach amidst all of the other preparations you have to do. Without further ado, I will turn the program over to Rebbetzin Dr. Adina Schmidman.
There is an icebreaker exercise that sometimes people play around a dinner table. The question is, if you could invite anyone to dinner, who would it be? A famous rabbi, a mentor, a family member, a great figure in history? The Seder night is built on this idea of inviting guests. Kol dechmin yesei ve'yechol. Let all who are hungry come and eat. But our Seder is not limited to those who are sitting around our table. As we journey through the evening and the Haggadah begins to unfold, our table gets fuller and fuller. We welcome the four sons, each representing a different perspective. We sit with our sages and halachic voices. We draw strength from heroes and leaders throughout our history, their presence, their words, their insights, they all have a seat at the Seder. Each voice plays a role in our collective story, a story of liberation, of identity, of purpose, of national memory tied to a national mission. The past gives us roots and direction, and the future lies with those who will carry our story forward. V'yotzienu Hashem Elokeinu Misham, B'yad Chazaka uvizroa netuya. Hashem took us out of Egypt with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Just as he redeemed us then, he remains present in our lives today, not only in dramatic moments, but also in the quiet personal ones. Viktor Frankl writes in Man's Search for Meaning, between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space is our power to choose our response. And in our response lies our growth and our freedom. That's the essence of Seder night. It's not just a retelling, it's a re-choosing. a pause in time where we reflect what it means to be free, where we remember who we are, and where we recommit to who we want to become. The Seder invites us to open our homes and our hearts to the people at the table and to voices across time. We make space for those who came before us, and we lean into messages they left behind. And in doing so, we find Hashem in that space in between, guiding us, supporting us, and redeeming us again and again. Before I close, I want to express my heartfelt thanks. Thank you to Mrs. Andrea Shulman, Executive Director of Masorah Baltimore, for her vision and her partnership, and to Susan Zuckerbrot, the President of Masorah, for your warm welcome. To Dr. Ayala Chachar, Torah Coordinator for the OU Women's Initiative, and the entire OU Women's Initiative team, thank you for your dedication. Ayala drove from Queens this morning after being in New Jersey for Shabbos and in Philadelphia last week. So thank you, and thank you for this idea, because this event is our first live Ideas and Inspiration event. We are so grateful to Baltimore, to each one of you, for your very warm welcome, for this opportunity to partner. To Jacqueline Silva, who coordinates BG Cubed with care and creativity, and to the inspiring speakers, Shira Hochheimer, Sarah Malka Winter, and Jacqueline Silva, who contributed to this project. Your voices add depth and meaning to our Seder experience. It's a privilege to be part of the Women's Initiative. It's a platform devoted to deepening Jewish learning and elevating women in their communities across the globe. We invite you to take part in our upcoming Ideas and Inspiration programming around Pesach. Join us for our Leadership Summit in May and participate in Counting Towards Sinai, our post-Pesach learning initiative, where we will be focusing on growth through Midos. You can find more information about these opportunities in the lobby. Please note that these remarks are being compiled in a Seder collection that will be emailed to those on our email list, as well as being represented on Zoom. So if you're not on our email list, please use the QR code on the flyers outside or email at ouwomen@ou.org, and we will be glad to include you and add you to our Women's Initiative community. So while you sit around the Seder table with your family, your friends, your memories, and your dreams, I hope that this collection of Haggadah thoughts adds meaning to your experience and deepens your appreciation for the people and the messages that fill our lives. I invite you to listen and prepare for Pesach in the most uplifting and enriching way.
Good morning. Okay, Rav Judah Michelle just came out with a new Haggadah that Shopsies knew that I was long excited for. I was anxiously anticipating it coming out. And within the first page, I fell in love. And he tells a story that he was finishing his Seder, and he was so excited to spend the whole night uplifted and learning and deepening his emunah and relationship with Hashem. But he started wandering the streets of Eretz Yisrael, where he lives, and he knocked on his Rebbe's door, and his Rebbe opens the door, and they were still in the midst of their Seder. And Rav Judah Michelle sat and watched his Rebbe's Seder and their interactions, and he was just in awe. And Rav Judah Michelle felt like it was time to get up and to leave. And his Rebbe walked him to the door and said, Rav Judah, thank you so much for joining us. But next year, don't come. Ta'amin b'seder shalcha. Believe in your own Seder. I start that because, you know, here we're three women who are presenting Torah ideas. You might get the glimpse or idea that, you know, our Seder is more spectacular. Ta'amin b'seder shalachen. Everybody's Seder is where you're meant to be. It's going to be beautiful. We're just here to add insights and ideas, perhaps conversation starters for your Seder. So I love speaking about topics that ignite me and excite me. So when we were told to pick something in the Haggadah, the options were endless. But I'm a big believer that any book that you own, or if you ever watched a video, within the first few moments of that speech, video, or book, you know if you're hooked or not. And so with the most crucial part of the entire Seder, Maggid, how do we begin? How does the Seder choose to begin at the most fundamental important part of the Seder? And that's where I went. And we are all familiar with the words of Halach Ma'anya, right? And I want to break it down for you because sometimes when we're so familiar with something, we forget to stop and pay attention. And so that's what I want to do with you this morning and hopefully leave you with three insights this morning. There are three sentences that we say during Halach Ma'anya. Halach Ma'anya di'achlu avasana da'ara dimitrayim. Number one, we say, this is the bread that we ate in Egypt. This is the bread that we eat in Mitzrayim. But it's not just any bread. It's lachma anya. It's bread of affliction, of pain, of torment, of servitude, slavery. Sentence number two. Kol dichven yesei v'yecho, kol ditzrich yesei v'yefsach. What this paragraph is most famous for, the invitation, if anybody needs a meal, if you're hungry, if you're needy, please come. There's a seat at the table. There's room in our heart. There's room in our home. Please come and enjoy. And last but not least, Lashana Habad Ba'aretz Yisrael, Hashta Avdei Lashana Habad B'nei Chorin. As if we're like skipping to the end of the Seder already, basically, Lashana Habad Yerushalayim. Like, let's get this, make this clear, Lashana Habad Yerushalayim. These are three very random sentences. Aleph, this matzah at my table was bread that we eat in Egypt in slavery. Number two, if anyone needs an invitation, please know that you're wanted. And number three, Lashana Habad Yerushalayim. These three seem so disconnected. Fragmented. What's the connection between these three? Question number two, of course, is a question I think we've all asked at our Seder before. Like, is this a real invitation? Like, we're all sitting at our table, all dressed, ready to go. There's not even a plate. There's not even an extra plate at our Seder. Are we really extending an invitation? At the very least, get up to the door, look if there's someone in need, right? But my last question, which I think is something that really bothered me more this year, I found, than ever, which was, you know, we say later in the Haggadah, which I believe Mrs. Hochheimer is going to be talking about, it's matzah. Zusha anu achlush ashama. Why are we eating this matzah? Because we were in such a rush to get out. It basically represents freedom, our rush to get out. Wait, I'm confused. Is this matzah lachma anya? Is this matzah because it represents slavery, torment, sadness? Or is this the bread that we took on our way out and it really represents freedom? So those are my three questions. Number one, what's the connection between these two sentences? Number two, is this invitation even real? And number three is, what is this matzah really? So with that, we will begin. Let's begin with the invitation. So the Habadram and the Ritva both explain that when we begin our Seder, the very fact you can extend an invitation is in and of itself a sign of freedom. As slaves, we did not have enough. Certainly not enough to eat, let alone to share. And it's not just that we didn't have enough to share, but when you're a slave with a slave mentality, very often we can't consider the needs of others. The Vilna Gaon says that tsar, it's from the narrow. Not just because those painful circumstances feel like we're in a narrow place, but sometimes, and totally normally, they make us narrow-minded. It's a survival mindset. I don't have the capacity to think about my neighbor's kids when I'm dealing with my own stuff. And so the capacity on this night to say, who needs something to eat? Not only do we have what to share, but we can mentally consider the capacity to share. That, in and of itself, is a mark of freedom. And so, while it's true that realistically we're symbolically extending an invitation, I think it sends two messages to the people at our table. Number one, how lucky are we? How lucky are we that we can extend an invitation? And number two, this is what freedom means in this family. To be on the giving end, that's what it means. To have is not freedom. It's to have in order to give. That's what freedom's about. And perhaps that's, you know, it was because of the lach ma'anya that we couldn't share. That now that I have the capacity to share, whoever wants, I want to give. And then if we become giving people, L'shana haba b'Yerushalayim, that's what will bring us there. Interestingly, this is not the first time that we're extending an invitation to someone to join at our table for matzah. It happened in the very beginning of the Chumash. Somebody invited guests to his home and offered them matzah. And of course, that's Avraham Avinu. And the Alshach says, you know when that was? It happens to be that it was Pesach. His guests showed up on Pesach. Like, I don't know. I mean, matzah is delicious and all, but you know, why are you choosing matzah? And I believe it's quite deep. Right before the guests show up, Avraham is told at the end of Lech Lecha, Avraham, your children are going to be slaves for a long time. The future is going to be dark for a little bit. But know that right after that, they're going to go free. But there's a two-step journey for that. Avraham did not even yet have a kid. And he's told that the future of your children is going to have a tekufa, a time period of darkness, before it gets light. And so the very next page, you turn the page, and Avraham has these three guests show up on Pesach. And he says, I want to serve you a whole matzah. Because I believe that what Avraham was saying to not only his own family, but to all of us, is that that lachma anya, that bread of pain, is actually the very seeds for freedom. That galus, the word galus, exile, is from the word legalos, to reveal. That it's not two separate things. The hardship is what makes the tov. Or in the words of Rav Hirsch, without marar, without those painful times, without marar, the refreshing flower of Pesach would never have blossomed. Had we not gone through Egypt, had we not seen who we can be, resistance builds who we can be. That's what built us. And so this whole matzah represents that hard times, it's not that we're waiting for the hard time to end to get us to the good. The hard times is what builds us into incredible people. And so, that is what Avraham was feeding his guests Pesach. Pesach night, before the actual whole thing happened, to say, matzah, the bread that you ate in Egypt is the very bread you're going to eat on the way out. Because it's one and the same. Because it's one and the same. Difficult circumstances and situations, while we do not want them, often change us into people who we can become. Two more quick ideas. So approach number one is that we're inviting guests to our meals because now we have the capacity to give, the capacity to share. There is nothing more free than that. And to understand that this matzah, the bread that went through difficult times, is also the matzah that built us into who we became. That's Jewish history. Approach number two is the Maharal. It's quite deep. You know, we might call matzah lach ma'anya, the poor man's bread. But you know what? Maybe we have it all wrong. Maybe it's that person, that poor man, who doesn't have financial status. He might not have letters after his name. He doesn't define himself by what yeshiva he went to or what seminary she went to. He doesn't define himself by what community he goes to because he doesn't have any of those. There's no educational barometer or mask or bumper sticker he can pin on himself. And so at his core, he knows who he is because he doesn't hide behind all the masks and accolations and labels. Matzah is independent of sugar and oil and thyme and all of those extra flavorings to remind us that this is an opportunity to get back to who we really are. That true freedom is not piling things on top of my identity, but getting back to who I really, really am at my core. And that's true freedom. Perhaps that's why matzos and mitzvos share the same letters. Let's get back to the core of who we really are, bring out our authentic self. And so I love when Rav Kook and Rav Karlin, a Chassid HaShareba and Rav Kook, can say the same idea, that when we say, anyone who's needy and hungry, please come to this table. Anyone who's hungry to really get to know the real you. If anyone's hungry to know the truth of who you really are, come, let's eat some matzah together. Let's eat matzos. Let's get to know the real us. Let's put away some of the masks and bumper stickers and definitions of success we have about ourselves. Let's put away the sugar and the oil and the eggs. Who are we really? And that's true freedom. And perhaps when that's why we daven Lashana Haba B'Yerushalayim, a day when we all, when it's the realest selves coming out. The realest selves coming out. And I want to end with the following. Really, in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, by the time you sat down to eat your korban, you were not allowed to invite anybody to your meal. Halachically, you had to choose your chabura, it was called, your group, before you sat down. But here we are on Seder night in 2025, and we're extending an invitation well into the Seder. We've already had a few steps by now, and that, it digs deep. It stabs. You know what? We really shouldn't be allowed to do this. The fact that I can extend an invitation means I'm not where I belong. And so, Lashana Haba B'Yerushalayim. The fact that I can extend an invitation reminds me that I'm not home where I belong. And so, Lashana Haba B'Yerushalayim Habaniyah.
Wow, this is so impressive to see all these women come out on an Erev Pesach morning. So I really appreciate all of you joining us and speaking for all of us here for this speaking to really learn. It's more inspiring for me than I think than anything I can say to you. So there's a mitzvah of Sibur Yetzias Mitzrayim, telling over the story of the Pesach story on Seder night. If I asked you, based on what you see in the toy aisle of 7 Mile Market, what would you say is the most important part of the Seder? Has anybody been to 7 Mile Market to shop yet? Frogs, right? The whole aisle is full of frogs. So what is actually the main part of the Seder that if we skip that page in our entire thick Haggadah, we are not yotzei the mitzvah of Sibur Yetzias Mitzrayim? So Rabban Gamliel and Haya Omer, Rabban Gamliel says, "Kol shelo amar shlosha dvarim elu bePesach lo yatzei yedecho aso." If you don't say three things on Pesach, you're not yotzei. And what are they? Pesach, matzah, umarah. Three ideas. If we do not say those 10 letters, everything we did before in preparation and all the challah that we say afterwards doesn't count. So this was a very hard idea for me to understand. Until a few weeks ago. I'm upstairs, you know, it's a wonderful school. In addition to this school, there's another school called Wits of Baltimore, formerly Ma'alot, and I'm the director of technology. And there's a company that I work with called Intellicomp, which is a fantastic business. Many of you might be familiar with it. And they manage the IT portion of our network. And we had a new computer, and we installed all the software, and it's the top of the line. And the teacher comes into the classroom and she calls me desperate right before she's about to teach class. And she goes, "The password's not working." And I said, "What do you mean the password's not working?" She's like, "I'm typing in my username, I'm typing in my password, and I can't get into the computer." And sure enough, I come into the classroom and I type in my username, I type in my password, but I can't get into the computer. What I learned is you can have the best machine, but if you don't know the password, you're not getting into the roots, the heart of it. You can't use it. And that is Pesach night. We can have the best Seder, but if we don't understand the key to what it is to unlock the Seder, if we don't understand Pesach, Matzah, and Maror, we're not unlocking the potential of Seder night. So that's what I want to explore today, is what is it about Pesach, Matzah, and Maror that unlocks the entire experience of Pesach. So let's start with Pesach. The Haggadah says, "Pesach shahayu avosenu ochlin bizman shebeis hamikdash hayakayam al shema." What is this so special of the Pesach? Al shum shepesach hakadosh baruch hu al batei avosenu b'Mitzrayim. Hashem skipped over the houses in Mitzrayim. So what was this story about the skipping over at the time of Mitzrayim? So Hashem had told Bnei Yisrael to make the Korban Pesach, and they went and they took a sheep and they tied it to their beds, and then they took blood and they smeared it on the door. And at the moment of Makas Bechoros, when the firstborns were dying, Hashem didn't kill everybody. He chose the Mitzrayim to kill. So why is that the most important, that we call our entire holiday Pesach, wouldn't we think that the biggest miracle is that Hashem himself, b'chvodo v'atzmo, killed all the Mitzrayim? Why is the thing that we commemorate that Hashem skipped over the houses? So Rav Baruch Rosenblum, who is a speaker in B'nai Brak, says in his Haggadah Baruch Yomeru, he explains, as Mrs. Sova mentioned, that Avraham was promised that his children would be in Mitzrayim for 400 years. And the Jewish people were living in the immoral culture of Mitzrayim. And they maintained their identity strongly for 210 years. Until at a certain point, they absorbed the culture until they were at the 49th level of impurity. And Hashem knew had they descended to that 50th level of impurity, they would not have been recognizable as the children of Avraham Avinu, and they could not have been saved. At that moment, when we were about to lose our identity and lose our rights to being saved, Hashem came in and jumped from house to house to save us. He didn't have time to say, okay, all Jews, I'm going to gather you in a separate place. He had to have an urgency in order to save us. That urgency, that rush, was demonstrated the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves the Jewish people. When a person loves somebody else, when if you see your child is about to fall, you rush in and you pick them up. You don't wait a second. And that's what Hashem was showing them, is that we are his children, and when he sees we're about to fall, he jumps in. So now let's turn to matzah. What's the lesson of the matzah? Matzah, zush anu ochlim, al shema. Why do we eat the matzah? So we know that the matzah was also eaten at the Pesach Seder. But that's not what the Haggadah tells us, why we have to talk about the matzah at the Seder. Al shum shelo hispik b'tzeikum shel avoseinu lahachmitz, ad shenigwa aleihem melech malchihem lochem HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'bgalam. So they didn't have time for the dough to rise until Hashem saved them. As it says, that they baked their matzos, kilo chametz, they didn't allow time to rise, ki garshim yitzrayim, they were being chased out of Mitzrayim, v'lo yachlu lehismameya, they could not delay, v'gam seida lo asu lahem, and they also made no provisions. When we were leaving Mitzrayim, the only food we took was that we didn't have time to let the dough rise. But let me ask you a question. Have any of you ever gone on a trip or gone to the park or gone down the street with you or anyone else in your family? What do you have with you? You have a snack and a drink. And I think this may be our PTSD from Mitzrayim, is that no woman lets her kid leave the house unless they have food with them, right? But at that time in Mitzrayim, the women, the men, they did not take any food with them. Why not? Rav Reuven Karelenstein, who's a speaker in B'nai Brak, has his ideas are collated in a series of svarim called Yafi Reuven. He said, we didn't even feel a need to pack a nugo bar. Why not? Because if a person is invited to a state dinner, if you were about to be invited to the White House for dinner, and you know it's completely kosher, God kosher, would you pack a dinner with you? Or would you say, it's going to be provided for me? If you're going to the wonderful May Lay Leadership Conference for the OU, I'm telling you, the food is incredible at everything they do. I don't pack food when I go to any of their events. It's wonderful. Right? When you know that you're being taken care of, when you trust the person, you don't pack food to go to there. You don't just bring a sandwich just in case. The Jewish people in Mitzrayim trusted Hashem so much that they did not bother to pack any food. They took these matzos and that was it. They loved Hashem and they trusted him. In fact, in Sefer Yirmiyahu, which some of us may have learned together, he recounts those early days of the Jewish people, where he says that B'nai Yisrael, Lefkech acharai b'midbar, b'eretz lo zeroth. They went after me to a land that had no vegetation. And he calls it an avas kulo yosayach, a love of a young couple. We followed Hashem into the desert with nothing to eat because we were completely infatuated with Hashem. It's even more than that. Hashem commanded us to eat the Karban Pesach with matzah, which we brought out when we left. And how, if anybody is Sfaradi, I've heard about this custom, I don't know, I had never experienced it. There's a minhag that the people get up with the matzah on their shoulders to commemorate going out. I see some shaking heads, yes, they've done this. They go out in Mitzrayim, they walk around their Seder table with the matzah on their shoulder. Because that's how the Jews left Egypt, right? So now, the question we have to ask is, why did they put the matzah on their shoulders? Well, I always thought that, okay, you're leaving as slaves, you take everything, you schlep it on your shoulders, but let's think, what else did the Jewish people leave Mitzrayim with? We know that the Bnei Yisrael, Avraham Avinu, was promised that his children would leave Birchush Gadol, with tremendous wealth. And Chazal tell us that every person left with 90 donkeys carrying their wealth. You're telling me that they couldn't find on one of those donkeys a little place to hang their peckle of matzah? Really? Why couldn't they just stick the matzah on one of the donkeys? Why did everybody have to have a knapsack with their matzah in it? Especially when it was, you know, and they were trusting Hashem. Why are they taking leftovers from their Pesach Seder with them to leave Mitzrayim? So Rav Reuven Kellerlenstein says the following, and I'll give you, I recently took a trip, first time in 25 years I went to Eretz Yisrael. And so what did I pack in my little bag that I held on me? I put my passport, I put my money. If I was bringing jewelry, that's where you keep your jewelry, right? What do you pack into the things that go underneath? Anything that you don't really care about that's going to get lost, right? If I had a sheitel, I put in my bag that I'm carrying. Everything else can go underneath. What did the Jews hold on to them that they kept with them? They kept the matzah, because that was the most precious thing they had. The matzah was their jewelry. The matzah was their money. All that wealth, the gold, the clothing, the jewels that they got from Mitzrayim, that can go in storage. That can go under the plane. But what I'm taking with me is my mitzvos, because I love HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And what about Marar? Marar zesh anu ochlim al shulma. Why do we have Marar? Al shum shemiru ha-Mitzrayim eschaye avosem b'Mitzrayim. The Mitzrayim made our lives bitter in Mitzrayim. So we eat maror to remember the torture, because we are saying a very important principle about this maror. The Jews were supposed to be in Mitzrayim, as we've said, for 400 years. And when Miriam was born, her name was called Miriam, because at that moment, the servitude intensified, because Hashem wanted to speed up the process. He wanted to cut off, right, Hashem chishe besaketz, and he cut off 190 years off of the end of the galus, and he made it compacted. The amount of torture that we were supposed to have over 400 years was now in 210 years. So the fact that we had maror was actually a sign of Hashem's care for us. There are things that are hard that are done by Hashem because he loves us, and we accept that because we love him and we know that he cares about us. So we see Hashem's love for us in Pesach. That was outright love. The matzah, again, is a demonstrable love. But the maror is a deeper love. It's, I trust you and I know you care about me. And Hashem, I know that what you're doing for me is only out of love. So why are these three words the password for all of the mitzvos of the Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim? That if we don't say them, we're missing the point of Mitzrayim. The key to what we need to learn about Pesach is that Hashem loves us and we love Hashem. Hashem loves the Jewish people and will rush in to save us when we need it. And we love Hashem and his mitzvos, and those mitzvos are precious to us. We read on Shabbos Pesach, what is the Megillah that we read on Pesach? Shir HaShirim, the love story of the Jewish people that is the essence of the holiday. It says in Shir HaShirim, Ani v'dodi v'dodi li, I am to my beloved, to Hashem, v'dodi li, and my beloved is to me, v'dodi li v'ani lo, my beloved is to me and I am to him. There's a reciprocal love between Hashem and his people. So now, to make this practical, what do two people in love do? They act a little bit crazy for each other, right? When I was engaged, I went to my grandmother, who I love to tell stories about her because she was the most practical woman. And I asked her for what her secret to happy marriage is. So she said, if I want to go for a walk and your grandfather wants to stay home, but I really, really want to go for a walk, we go for a walk. But if your grandfather really, really, really wanted to stay home, we stay home. That's the key to a happy marriage. So she taught me that when you're in love, you do things for the other person when it's important to them. And the main thing is that you be together and do things together. This is how the Netziv explains the mitzvah of Avas Hashem. He says that when a person is loved, they are willing to give up something valuable because it means something to the other person. Love means compromise and going outside of our comfort zone. The Netziv also says that love is a desire to be close and to spend time with the other one. The most important part of the relationship is getting to be together, not worrying who's getting their way and who gets to make decisions. This is what this time of year is about. Hashem's love for us has never changed. He always will love us. We just need to look at the world around us and think about all the gifts he has given us, and we can't help but recognize his love for us. Pesach comes in the springtime. The birds are singing, the weather's starting to be beautiful, the days are longer. We just have to look around and we can see Hashem's love for us. The goal of Pesach is for us to develop love for Hashem. Even the easiest Pesach preparations, which we are probably everybody's going to be starting in around an hour, you know, everybody's gonna be changed, no more shetels, no more nice clothes, we're all gonna be in the thick of it, is work whether you stay home or go away. We know the mitzvahs of Pesach are important to Hashem, so we go all out beyond what is asked for us. I saw in some sfarim that women are actually even more crazy for Pesach than men are, because we have this natural netziah of love and giving that we want to put into this holiday. Rav Hirsch adds an additional element. Ahava, he says, comes from the root hav, to give. The aleph in front, when you have an aleph in front of a shorish, it turns the word reflexive. So ahava means to give oneself to the other person. True love means dedicating our efforts and our lives to someone else, which is what this entire month is about. That is Pesach in a nutshell. Before Pesach, we measure our matzahs, we kosher our kitchens, we clean all the shelves, we pack, we go shopping. I mean, this is a real hardship for all of us, okay? We eat matzah and maror, and then we delay this meal that we spent hours preparing and trying to figure out what time are we going to get to the meal to make sure it's hot but not dried out. We drive ourselves crazy because we want to talk about the Haggadah and express our love for Hashem. We are showing that we want to devote ourselves completely, physically, emotionally, spiritually, to Hashem and His servants. One of the most important parts how you can tell a person is in love is that when they do things with joy. When I am compelled to listen to an authority figure, I can tell the difference between when I'm doing a job and when my kid is doing a job. When my kid has to do a job, they march around and there's a few choice words and they don't necessarily want to do the thing that I'm asking them to do. But when I want something done, you know, we whistle while we work. We have a certain, we own it because we love it, because this is something that I want to do. When I listen to a request happily from someone, when I do, it comes from a place of love. And when a person loves something or someone else, they are so excited to talk about them. If somebody is into sports, right? I'm talking about, you know, some of my kids. Around the time of the championship, it's this team, that team. They're excited about it. What gets us excited? When we're excited about something, we talk about it, and we just can't stop, and we bubble over, and we're telling stories about a relative that we just want to share and share and share. And that's what the Seder is. There is no limit to what Sifrei Yetzias Mitzrayim is, because we're trying to talk from this sense of love. We are expressing our love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the Seder after a whole month of just preparing with love. All of our efforts are an effort which is just saying, I love you, Hashem. So as we prepare a Nisan, and as we have the Seder, this is our task that is in front of us. We have the chance to go a little crazy for Hashem, and we should do it with joy. We should recognize, yeah, I'm a little crazy, but that's okay. I don't need to limit my craziness. I can express that craziness and be happy that I'm doing these mitzvos. I know most of us are going to leave here with a list that is a mile long. As we rush about, let's remember that what we are saying with all of our list is, I love you, Hashem. Have a chag kasher v'sameach. Okay, we're going to talk about the frauds.
So, we know that Chazal teach us, Ba'asara ma'maros nivra ha'olam. Hashem created the world with 10 sayings. Hashem spoke 10 times, and by the time he finished speaking, there was a world. The Sfas Emes, the Ger Rebbe, quotes his grandfather, the Chidush HaRim, and he says like this, a very beautiful, profound statement. He said that actually the Jewish nation was on a journey from the Asara Mamaros, from those 10 sayings, to the Aseres Hadibros, to the 10 commandments, through the Eser Makos. The 10 plagues actually took us from the world of 10 Mamaros to the Aseres Hadibros, to the 10 commandments. And the question is, how and what happened there? So when Hashem created the world, the very first day of creation is called Yom Echad. On that day, it was the day, not just the first day, but it was the day of one. It was the day that there was clearly, visibly, only Hashem. And when you looked at the world, you saw God. When Hashem started to create, he did not just create a beautiful, multifaceted world. What started to happen is veils and coverings were put onto that world. By the time the world was complete, by the time the 10 sayings had been said, something very interesting happens in the world. You could actually see a world and not see God. God had hidden himself in that world. So this idea from the Sfas Emes really harkens back to the Maharal, who says, and that was the role of the 10 Makos. What the 10 Makos did is lift veil after veil after veil after veil, so that finally we were able to look at the world and say, oh, it is all you, Hashem. It is a world of one. And then we were ready to stand at Sinai and say, and hear God say, Anochi Hashem, do you see me? Do you hear me? It is all me. So actually, what God did is he took us from a world of one to a world of many, and then back to one again. And our ultimate goal is really to get back to a world in the messianic times of V'haya Hashem l'melech al-kol ha'aretz v'yom hu yeh Hashem echad. One more time, it's going to be absolute one. Using this vehicle of Pesach every year to remember it's one, it's one, it's one, it's one, so that finally we'll be able to get to a world of one. But that's interesting. So why the many? Why do we need to go from one to many to one? So there is a type of art form called an autostereogram. Familiar with it? It's a bunch of dots, and when you look at them, it just looks like a ton of dots. But if you change your focus, then you see that within the dots, there is this stunning 3D picture. That is our world. Hashem did not want us to erase the dots. Hashem did not want a world of just one. He wanted a world of many where we could still see one. The truth is, seeing the many without seeing Hashem doesn't just blind us to God, it blinds us to something else. So the second day of creation, Yom Sheni, is the only day of creation that does not say Ki Tov, does not say that Hashem saw that it was good. And the Rabbeinu Bachaye explains why. Rabbeinu Bachaye says the name Yom Sheni was the first day. It was the first time that the plan of Hashem, that the ratzon of Hashem was covered up enough that you could start not seeing Hashem. Because when there's only one veil on, when it's just the one, you see that there is a person behind the veil when someone's wearing a veil. But when there are two veils, then we start to really hide God. What happened when God started to be hidden? That was the day of Machlokas. That was the day of the separation of the waters, when the lower waters separated from the upper waters. The truth is, there was already a Havdalah. There already was a separation on the first day, but that was a separation between light and dark. The second day was the first time that two that were one, that two that could be one, that should be one, can separate. Because something very difficult happens when we stop seeing God. When we stop seeing God and we start seeing a world of so many dots and we don't see the picture behind the dot, that is the epitome of Avodah Zarah. That is the epitome of idol worship, of paganism, where we start to see, but there are so many powers and there are so many powers and I don't know how to keep myself safe when there are so many powers. That's when we start looking at other people differently too. And we start seeing how everybody is a competitor and everybody wants what I want and how can I stay safe in this world? In other words, when we stop seeing Hashem, that's when machlokas becomes possible. So here's a question for you. Where is Karpas in the Megillah? I didn't say the Haggadah. Where is Karpas in the Megillah? So it does say Chor Karpas Utrelas, right? Because Karpas is actually a kind of material, maybe like a velvet. In fact, the Ben Ish Chai explains that the reason we dip Karpas, the reason we dip Karpas into salt water, the answer to the Manishtana, why we need two dippings on Pesach, is to remember the very first time a Karpas was dipped and what it led to. What was that Karpas? What was that material of velvet that was dipped? This was Yosef's coat. This was the Kesonis Pasim. And the Ben Ish Chai says, we remember that when we stop seeing the full picture, when we stop changing our focus to see Hashem, when we see that we're living in a world of so many, so many, so many, that leads to machlokes, that leads to hatred. And yes, that can lead us to hate our brother so much that we can sell him. And that Mechiras Yosef dipping, that caused so much salt water. That caused so much, so many tears. The tears of Yaakov, the tears of Yosef, the tears of Yitzchak, the tears that we have shed all through millennium because of that hatred. We went through a process in Egypt to the second dipping, to the dipping of that we represent with the dipping of the Maror into Charoses, and that is the dipping of Karban Pesach, where we dipped the hyssop into the dam, and that became the Karban Pesach. And the language that's used there is the Agudah, when we learn to unite again. And so, on Pesach, through the Eser Malkos, we are going through a journey. And the journey is one where we take off veils. And the very first veil that we take off of Dam, actually, the Maharal explains that if you put 10 veils on top of each other, then you take off the outer one first, right? And it takes 10 to get back to the inner one. So that the Maka of Dam really was the most outer layer of the 10 Ma'amaros. And finally, finally, when we got to Makas Bechoros, that is really when we were able to once again see a world of Hashem as one. On Pesach night, we remember that as a nation, we are on a journey. We are on a journey to lift off veils. We are on a journey to see that beneath all of these dots, Hashem is the picture, and that really, truly, this is Hashem's world. It is a night where we hold a matzah, then we break a matzah, and then we find a matzah. And we remember that through our history, we have so many times breaking ourselves apart into so many pieces, seeing ourselves as so different from each other, and that it took us to come back together at Safon and recognize the idea that our Pesach Seder would not be complete with both pieces of matzah, that we need the unity of each other in order to see the unity of Hashem. And I feel like this year, when we look at a world and we see so many dots all over the world, and we feel like we're living in such a world of pain, of randomness, of so much going on, and we say to Hashem, Hashem, we want to see the One. We want to see that it is all You. Bring us to a world of peace again. Oseh shalom b'mormav hu yaseh shalom aleinu. Hashem turns it right back to us. And He says, but I gave you the recipe. I told you, change your focus. See Me in the world. See Me in your brother. See Me and see the shalom that I am so waiting to bring to you. The truth is that when we go on a journey from the 10 ma'amaros to the 10 dibros, so there's a difference between a mimer and a dibor. A mimer is a saying. It's a lecture. And nowadays, we could listen to lectures of people all around the world and even people who are no longer alive. In other words, you can hear a message and not see the speaker. Maybe not even know the speaker. But a dibor is a class. A dibor is, I'm talking to you. My message is for you. This journey that we went on from the Asara Ma'amaros to the Asaras HaDibros, this journey that we went to of a world where we see so much of Hashem, takes us to a place where we can truly feel like Hashem says, did you realize I was talking to you? Did you realize that I had you in mind in my world? And so our tefillah today is that we allow those veils to come off, and that Hashem lets us take those veils off. That when we read about the Eser Makos, we truly see Hashem in our Haggadah, in our world, and in our brothers and sisters. Thank you.
Thank you for joining together, for learning together, for inviting the Women's Initiative into your home to understand that freedom is represented by mitzvos and an invitation to our Seder, understanding the elements of love, Pesach, Matzah, and Maror, and finally the journey from creation to Geulas Mitzrayim and the ultimate Geula. Thank you for joining.